From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the future is yours. Here's what's happening. A COVID-19 vaccine developed by the biotechnology company called Moderna in partnership with the National Institutes of Health has been found to induce immune responses in all of the volunteers who received it in a phase one study. Now, these early results published in the New England Journal of Medicine show that the vaccine worked to trigger an immune response with mild side effects, fatigue, chills, headache, muscle pain, and some pain at the injection site, becoming the first U.S. vaccine candidate to publish results in a peer-reviewed medical journal. The vaccine is expected to begin later this month in a larger phase three trial, the final trial stage before regulators consider whether to make the vaccine available to the public. A Michigan man suspected of stabbing an elderly man outside of a convenience store after being refused service for not wearing a mask has been fatally shot by a sheriff's deputy. Sean Ernest Ruiz, 43 years old of Grand Ledge in Michigan, walked into a Quality Dairy store in the Windsor Township just after 6:30 a.m. and got into an argument with a 77-year-old man inside during a confrontation over his refusal to wear a face mask. Both men left the store and continued this dispute in the parking lot. Ruiz stabbed the man and fled in an area car. He was spotted by the sheriff's deputy. They stopped him. He got out of the car, held a knife to the deputy. The deputy shot him. I got this email from a prisoner. His name is Chris. I'm going to read you part of it. George, this email is coming to you from me, a federal prisoner. A friend is assisting me with emailing. This is regarding the COVID-19. I'm currently located at the Federal Correctional Institution located in Segoville, Texas. This has captured the local media. As of July 14th, 2020, there is, according to the Federal Bureau of Prisons website, 882 inmates currently that have tested positive for COVID. Seven staff that is currently positive and four recovered. This all started on June 25th when only three inmates tested positive when going to our institution's sick call. This contributed to a very, very fast explosion of the COVID-19. This place is a haven for the virus to spread at a very fast pace, especially on this compound where we have mostly open dorms and no one gets confined to their cells. I'm emailing you this since you are some sort of media. I really enjoy the show. But for some reason, I feel that the public needs to know that keeping us in prison is a high probability of a death sentence, especially for the older generation of inmates that is confined at these institutions. Chris. Wow. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, who's been looking at this COVID-19. That prisoner has a point, John. What do we do with them?
Well, you know, for the first time in 20 years, there was a federal execution. I don't know if you caught that one today. And I was thinking that the same thing you just said, which was that they just let him stay in prison. He probably would have died anyway of COVID-19. And, you know, it's so rampant right now. The spread of the virus was in correctional institutions that you would literally have to release most of the prison population from the country to save these people. It's a completely catch-22 situation. And, you know, I don't know if you heard what the CDC Chairman Redfield said today. He said that it's pretty clear right now that this COVID-19 virus is going to be around in the fall and the winter. And that's on top of 15 to 20 million people that could be infected with seasonal flu.
Yes.
In addition to COVID-19.
Right.
So they're terrified right now that the death rates that we see right now are paltry compared to what's going to happen this fall and winter. I mean, they've got to get some handle on this. I don't think there's any way of stopping this other than distancing and people wearing masks, face coverings, because, you know, I mean, we're looking at something that's so highly contagious, And the more recent evidence has all indicated that the particles, these nanoparticles of the virus, can not just spread 6 feet, they can spread hundreds of feet. You have somebody breathing, not sneezing, not coughing, just breathing, can send these nanoparticles of the virus into the air, and you happen to breathe it in, you know, inhale it, and you have a chance of getting infected. So I think for the time being, I think, you know, the social distancing, I mean, we've just witnessed Los Angeles.
Oh, shut down again.
California being shut down again.
Yep. People are going crazy, John. Thanks. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Listen to this story. A four-year-old child is sitting in the back seat of a car, finds a handgun, 4 years old, shoots it into the seat of the car, the driver, his mother maybe, and kills her. It happened in Illinois. A Westville, Illinois woman is dead after being shot by a four-year-old child. According to Captain Mike Hartshorn of the Vermilion County Sheriff's Office, Marita Heil, 64, was driving a car when the vehicle crashed into a gas station. Witnesses who ran to assist found Heil mortally wounded in the driver's seat and a young child in the back seat with a handgun. Now, the incident remains under investigation, but the coroner out there says the child who found the gun in the vehicle accidentally fired the gun into the driver's seat, striking Heil. Unbelievable. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic has led the Treasury Department to delay the federal tax filing deadline from its traditional mid-April date. But if you took that time to relax and think of other things, you need to focus, because the deadline to file your federal taxes, 11:59 p.m. Wednesday, that's tomorrow, and banks will make out with $18 billion in fees for processing Small Business Paycheck Protection Program, the relief loans during the pandemic. $18 billion in fees. Let's check in with Charles Koppes. Charles, your take on all of this. Is the economy going to come back, or are we in trouble?
Yeah, George, the second quarter earnings will be out this Thursday. It's going to be very bad. The pandemic has hit the economy after the longest debt expansion in history, and this is where we are. The pandemic narrative is now controls the direction of the economy. We have 6 states that have reversed their reopenings. 15 more are pausing. It's back and forth, very confusing, as you just said. I mean, schools, colleges, I don't know where this is going to go, but we right now have 500 companies have filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah. Here.
J.C. Penney, Brooks Brothers, Hertz is a 100-year-old company, by the way, 40,000 employees. They just filed bankruptcy. Even the Frontier Communications, the phone you called me on, been around 85 years. They just sent me a notice. They're going bankrupt. And the airlines are down 90% and everything. So it's very serious where we're going. You know, from here, the major banks are setting aside historic loan loss provisions. According to ZeroHedge.com, you can see that, bracing for a crash. And that's the top of their news feed. And this is, you know, all building into the fall and winter, just like you said. The CDC now says things will get worse by the fall and winter. Well, they're going to get worse when the government stimulus and benefits run out, right?
Exactly.
And Housing Coalition says 28 million eviction notices. This is, I've never seen anything like this, George. I mean, it's very concerning. I pray we get through this. We need to get out of debt, reduce our risk. Hedge and gold and silver, I could assess people there. And they can download my latest newsletter at chuckkoppes.com.
And we've got that link in our Twitter feed for you, Chuck, as well. But thank you so much for your input and your feedback on what really is and continues to be a very tense situation economically, emotionally, medically for so many people. Now, here's a story that has rocked the UFO community today. As a matter of fact, I had a chance to communicate with our weekend host, George Knapp, who has interviewed this individual a couple times on the program. The executive director of the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, one of the oldest UFO research organizations in the United States, has been arrested on charges of soliciting a minor for the purpose of engaging in sexual activity, according to police. Jan Harzen, who has headed MUFON since 2013, is accused of soliciting sexual activity from a detective that he apparently believed was a 13-year-old girl, according to a release from the Huntington Beach, California Police Department. What an unbelievable story. That's all I'm going to say. The United Arab Emirates will dispatch a satellite to Mars to study its weather and climate this week. It's a 1.3-ton probe. We'll follow up on it to see if it lifts off on Friday and keep our fingers crossed. Up next, the miracle habits, the secret of turning your moments into miracles. Mitch Horowitz back with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Mitch Horowitz back with us, historian of alternative spirituality and one of today's most literate voices of the esoteric, mysticism, and the occult. Mitch illuminates outsider history, explains its relevance to contemporary life, revealing the longstanding quest to bring empowerment and agency to the human condition. He is widely credited with returning the term New Age to respectable use and is among the few occult writers whose work touches the bases of academic scholarship, national journalism, and he's one of the best. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His latest work is called The Miracle Habits, The Secret of Turning Your Moments into Miracles. Mitch, welcome back. I'm looking forward to this. I love miracle shows.
Yes.
That's a miracle.
Miracles happen all the time.
That's right.
They are real, even in desperate straits like the times we're living through right now. You know, I define a miracle very simply. It's a fortuitous departure from all expected circumstance. And in the same way that tragedies do visit us in life, and they certainly do, extraordinary good news and fortuitous events also visit us. And my wish is to study ways that we can cultivate this in our lives.
Is your book out yet?
Yes, just came out today. It's out on Kindle.
It made it out.
Hardcover and audio are coming out a little bit later. They were delayed due to COVID.
You are one prolific writer, my friend.
I work hard. I enjoy it.
Tell me how you came upon writing a book on miracles.
Well, my previous book was called The Miracle Club, and it explored ways in which we can use our minds to cultivate ideal circumstances. But I realized that we go through grief, we go through difficulty. No one could have foreseen the COVID crisis, for example. And most of the time, our lives really come down to habits, to the behaviors that we engage in day by day, hour by hour. So I asked myself, what would be some rules that we can follow, even in times of crisis, that would help cultivate extraordinary events in our lives?
What would you say is a miracle?
I would say a miracle is anything that represents a fortuitous departure from all expected circumstance. People think they know us. They think they understand us. They think they have a measure of our strengths and weaknesses. Surprise them. Shock them. Because if you can cultivate certain habits of thought and behavior, you can expand what everyone expects is going to happen to you. And you'll feel wonderful when it occurs.
Can we create our own miracles, or do they just happen?
Well, once in a while, they just happen. Of course, you know, we live under many laws and forces, and sometimes there's a roll of the dice, and we suffer tragedy. Sometimes there's a roll of the dice, we experience wonderful things. But I am absolutely persuaded, George, that we can cultivate miracles in our lives. We can cultivate absolute behaviors that are going to produce fortuitous events.
Is there any limit, Mitch, to what a miracle can be and do?
Well, there's no limit. You know, things can be quite rare, of course. I mean, we all live under laws of mortality and physical decline. We are going to leave these physical forms at a certain point. But I think we experience extraordinary events in our lives that really would not be foreseeable if you asked our friends and peers and loved ones and colleagues what's going to happen to us. I want us to shake up those expectations. I want us to overturn those expectations.
Your chapters are broken down into habits. You have 13 of them. Tell me about that.
Well, I really wanted to focus on everyday behaviors and things that just make up our lives hour by hour. So, for example, one of the miracle habits is get away from cruel people. If you are around cruel people who bully you, deplete you, put you down, sometimes in very subtle and passive ways, you're going to think that there's something wrong with you. You're going to think that you need fixing. In many, many cases, what we call neuroses, what we call complexes, are just a result of being around the wrong kinds of people. We have to resolve to get away from cruel people. That's one of the miracle habits.
What creates that magnetism between people to migrate to cruel people? I mean, you would think that's the first kind of person you want to get away from.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, sometimes we feel we have no choice, but sometimes, and we really have to look at this in ourselves, sometimes we enjoy conflict in the same way that we enjoy going on a roller coaster or going to a horror movie. We engage in conflict and friction and argument sometimes because we enjoy it. I mean, look at Twitter or other social media. 80% of it, 80% of it, I would estimate, is bickering. There's a whole anger economy out there. We gravitate towards these relationships. Sure, you know, there's a temporary thrill in having a fight with somebody, in having an argument with somebody, whether online or in person, but it dissipates and it leaves us very depleted. Sometimes we choose these relationships because they're temporarily thrilling.
COVID-19, Mitch, has got a lot of people upset. It's affected a lot of lives, businesses, and everything else, and it's a very difficult time for a lot of people. We need a miracle.
Absolutely.
How do we get one out of this?
I think, number one, you have to have an absolute focus of what you want out of life. Focus and concentration bring power. It is a law of nature. It is a law of your psyche. If you wave your hand in front of you right now, you're going to push air currents out of the way. You push water out of the way, photons of light out of the way. But when those things are concentrated, they become an irresistible force. As above, so below. What goes on in nature goes on in your psyche. Focus on exactly what you need. Be very specific. Be very hardcore. In the book, I talk about the benefits of focusing on something for 10 days, bringing to bear every possibility from prayer to outward action. Mental focus is a force. Concentration is a force, and you can use that to your benefit.
Your final chapter, or habit 13, talks about rule in hell. What does that mean?
Yes, sir. That's probably my favorite of the miracle habits. Rule in hell means you shouldn't go after respectability. Don't listen to what society tells you you have to do. There are lots of people who are paying large sums of money, for example, to return to college this fall, and they're attending online classes. They're not getting any financial break from most of the universities out there. I want you to ask the question of whether that respectable path is really necessary. Is it economically necessary? Is it practical for you? Don't seek respectability. The whole world has been upended, and we are entitled to reconsider our choices and ask whether we have to follow some of the traditional paths that society or peer pressure tells us we have to follow. Throw away respectability. That's what rule in hell means.
Mitch, is positive thinking with belief all you need to do to create a miracle, or do you have to work for it?
I believe you have to work for it. I take what I call a D-Day approach. You throw everything at the problem. It's like when you're sick, for example. You might take a pill. You might engage in prayer. You might engage in all kinds of different therapies, some of them mainstream, some of them alternative. Throw everything at it. It's not about just doing one thing or another. Problems are complex, and solutions are complex. So I believe in positive thinking. I believe in mind metaphysics. I believe in focus. And I also believe in working. You know, treat it like D-Day. Throw everything you have at it.
What's the simplest way to get into the miracle mode?
The simplest way to get into the miracle mode is concentration on one absolute definite aim. We are very often dishonest with ourselves. We're afraid to tell ourselves what we really want out of life because perhaps we think it sounds selfish or we think it's unspiritual or what have you. I ask everyone, just as an experiment, suspend that way of thinking for 24 hours and ask yourself, what do I really want in life? Don't worry about what other people are going to think about it. Don't internalize peer pressure. Just ask yourself that question, not so much in an intellectual way or a mental way, but in an emotional way. What do you really want? And if you interrupt habitual thought and ask yourself that question in a dedicated way, you'll be surprised at the answer. And the answer could be pointing you towards something extraordinary because mental concentration is a force, just like concentration is a force throughout nature.
And you need to be ready. Let's assume you pray for a miracle to get a new job. Well, you might get that call from that prospective employer, but you better be ready for that job. You better
Absolutely.
Be, you know, trained and ready to go, right?
Yeah, you should always be preparing, always be training. The martial artist Bruce Lee is a hero to me, and he said he didn't fear the opponent who practiced 10,000 different moves. He feared the opponent who practiced one move 10,000 times. So whatever it is that you're into. Train, train, train. Whether you're going to be applying for your trucking license, or whether you're going to be in the military, whatever it is that you do, you should be training all the time. Render yourself excellent. Very often, what we call good luck is just opportunity meeting us where we're most prepared.
It sure does. We're going to come back with Mitch Horowitz. His work is The Miracle Habits. We'll take calls next hour. I'll tell you about that later on. But we shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you, along with Mitch Horowitz, author of The Miracle Habits, The Secret of Turning Your Moments into Miracles. We'll take calls with Mitch next hour. Perhaps you can share some of your own miracle stories with us, too. Remember the movie It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, for sure.
A classic, right?
Absolutely.
Now, wasn't it a miracle that Clarence the Angel brought himself down to save George Bailey from, you know, jumping into the water and, you know, doing himself in and trying to convince him what life would be like for other people with him gone? Would you call that a miracle movie?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in fact, one of the things I always tell people is that whenever you're suffering, as the character in that movie was, try to hang on for 24 hours more. Try to hang on for 24 hours more, because you have no idea the extraordinary good news that life could visit upon you. And I don't say that as some platitude. Everyone listening would agree that life visits tragedies upon us. That's one of the things that we all have to deal with. But in as much as life is tragic, it can also just be extraordinary, joyous, and absurd good news. Unbelievable perspectives and good turns can come to us out of the blue. It's not just blind hopefulness. It's fact. It's fact. Try to hang on for 24 hours longer if you're dealing with deep pain.
Why are you suspicious of people that talk and boast about charity and service?
Yeah, it's interesting, George. You know, it sounds kind of heartless on the face of it. Gee, is Mitch against charity?
Well, and you're not a heartless guy. I know you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. You know, I find that a lot of times people who talk charity and service do just that. You know, they talk. I want to know people by their actions. What I'm more interested in is solidarity. If somebody is hurting, do you come to their side? Do you come to their side silently? You know, if somebody is suffering from some kind of an injury, maybe they've been run down in reputation or something like that, maybe you feel it's unfair, show them that you believe in them. Show them that they're not just being abandoned to the mob. You know, I think there's really a lot to be said for solidarity, which is just showing somebody that when you're injured, when you're hurt, when you're smeared, you're not going to be abandoned. I think that's infinitely more valuable than talking about service and goodness. Do it silently if you're going to do it at all. But, well, you know, when I was a kid, I read a religious passage in the Talmud, beware the man who bespeaks his own virtue. Don't talk virtue. Act with solidarity.
Act it. That's yes, absolutely sir. True. What about prayer, Mitch?
I believe prayer is something that everybody should be engaging in, and they should engage in it on their own terms. It's the one escape hatch that we always have from pain that life faces us with. If you have if you practice a standard traditional religion, then by all means, engage in that kind of prayer. But I also believe that prayer is limitless. Prayer is without boundary. If you feel a connection to one of the ancient gods, let's say, from Greek or Egyptian tradition, whether that's Jupiter or Zeus or Athena or Set, you can try to find a relationship with that figure. You know, our ancient ancestors observed energies in nature, and they personified these energies. They gave them names, like Mercury or Athena or Jupiter or Minerva.
Zeus.
And I wouldn't just dismiss that. We admire these people for their calendars, their agriculture, their engineering. Why shouldn't we also probe their spiritual ideas? You can form whatever relationship you want with any deity you want, and you can pray, you can petition. There's no rules. I encourage everybody to try it.
You also like a late author, a mystical author by the name of Neville Goddard, who died in 1972. Tell me about your interest with him.
He's the greatest influence of my life. I have a tattoo of Neville Goddard on my,
really?
My left bicep, as a matter of fact. Yes. Neville had one simple teaching, which is that your imagination is God. And whenever you encounter reference to God in Scripture, New Testament, Old Testament, you're encountering a symbolic reference to your own imagination, and that the Bible is a blueprint for your own psychological development, and that everything that you experience, including the words that I'm speaking right now, are a product of your own mental pictures and your own emotionalized thoughts. In fact, Neville would say that the very words that I'm uttering right now are just a figment of whatever your listeners are ready to hear. There's no Mitch speaking. Your own listeners are creating their own reality at this very moment through their thoughts, their beliefs, their perspectives. And Neville believed that your imagination is God, and he meant it in the most literal sense.
Interesting take. And how did you stumble across him?
You know, it was funny. I was writing an article about a Major League Baseball pitcher named Barry Zito, who used to pitch for the San Francisco Giants. This must go back now to 2003, and Barry used a lot of metaphysical methods in his training regimen, and he said to me, "Wow, you must really be into Neville." I had never heard the name before, so I went out and I got one of Neville Goddard's books. I was overwhelmed. It changed everything for me. Neville has become the most influential figure in my life.
That's fantastic. Habit number 8 in your book of 13 habits, spend for power. Tell me about that.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people have trouble maintaining budgets, and of course, I don't need to tell your listeners that everybody's going through a financial crisis right now. You should really make an effort only to spend money on things that will increase your ability to earn more of it. Obviously, we have to take care of certain necessities of life, but before you go spending money on entertainment, on anything new, any new object, whether it's an object of clothing or household appliance or what have you, ask yourself the question, is this going to help me be more productive? Is this going to help me earn? Is this active spending going to allow me to become more capable of earning money? That's what I mean by spend for power.
Would you say Napoleon Hill, who wrote the book Think and Grow Rich, dealt with miracles, or was he more motivational?
Well, he was really both. You know, Think and Grow Rich has been an extraordinary influence on me. And, you know, some people make the mistake of thinking that Napoleon Hill, because of his title, Think and Grow Rich, was just offering a mental program. But
to make
Hill
money, really, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was offering an overall program. You know, he was talking about how to concretize ideas into reality. Some of it is motivational. Some of it is action-oriented. I encourage everybody to read Think and Grow Rich. I try to reread it at least once every year of my life.
How did he come across these principles?
You know, it's funny. Napoleon Hill wrote his book in 1937 in the midst of the Great Depression, not much different than what we're going through right now. And Hill realized that as the old economic order was falling away, men and women were going to have to become increasingly self-reliant, whether they wanted to or not, in order to earn a living. And he felt that there were principles that you could apply that would allow you to take a basic idea and turn it into a money-making enterprise. And, you know, our generation, frankly, is going to have to rediscover these teachings because, unfortunately, we're facing circumstances that are similar to the Great Depression.
Absolutely. Who was the famous minister that you followed who died without faith?
Yeah, this was Norman Vincent Peale, the author of The Power of Positive Thinking, one of the books that really popularized the phrase positive thinking. I was told a story several years ago, which I write about in The Miracle Habits, by a successor of Peale's, another minister who was close to him. Peale was on his deathbed. He died in the mid-1990s, and his daughter walked into a room where some people were sitting vigil, and she said, "You know, Daddy is on his deathbed, and he has no faith. He has no faith."
Interesting.
Yeah, and I heard that story, and I thought to myself, I could be in that position someday. You know, I didn't judge him. I asked, you know, what is faith? What does faith really mean? And I came to feel that what faith means, at least for me, is persistence. Faith is a kind of persistence. And if people have problems with the term faith, substitute the term persistence and see what that does for you.
Would you say what you practice, Mitch, is motivation? I mean, would Anthony Robbins love this?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Anthony Robbins, he's helped a lot of people, and I admire him. I'm more metaphysical in nature than Robbins is. He has a lot of wonderful ideas. I place more of an emphasis on the fact that we live in the physical world, and we also live in a metaphysical world. Our thoughts are causative. We have a non-physical existence, and I believe that's a very important part of what happens to us.
Yet you both deal with the power of the individual.
Absolutely. I think that the individual has vastly more power than he or she realizes. But this power gets hidden from us. It gets run down because we're in the wrong kind of company. We're around the wrong kind of peer pressure. We're told that certain things are unrealistic. My contention is that a focused and concentrated mind and actions that complement that mental focus can make you extraordinarily powerful. But we don't try it. We don't believe it. We allow ourselves to get waylaid by entertainment or by intoxication or by escapism, and we don't really give ourselves the benefit of harnessing our full power.
Where does ESP, extrasensory perception, fit into this?
You know, I've been working on ESP research and writing about ESP research for many, many years. Several years ago, someone said to me, maybe all this positive thinking is really just ESP. Maybe we're always sending out signals, so to speak, and other people might get attracted to us, be willing to meet us halfway, be willing to lend us a hand. And I was intrigued by that statement, and I began to do everything I could to educate myself about, immerse myself in ESP research. I'm not a clinician. I'm a seeker. But I've surveyed the landscape of ESP research in this country going back to the 1930s, and I have to say, there is absolutely no question that we have juried clinical evidence for some extraphysical capacity of thought. People have no idea how powerful their thoughts are. When you concentrate on something, you may be engaging in the ESP of everyday life. You may be reaching out to people. You may be somehow contacting people who can meet you halfway, who can lend you a hand. Never underestimate the powers of your thoughts.
Habit 4, solidarity. Tell me about
it. Yes. That is really just standing by people when they're injured, when they're suffering. It is abstaining from gossip. I believe that gossip, talebearing, rumor is an absolute smog in this society. It's choking us. You know, when we trade rumors about people, most of the time, we're trading stories that we know nothing about. We're sharing stories that might be mitigated by circumstances that we don't know anything about. And it afflicts us as well. There's an absolute reciprocity in life, I think psychologically and I think metaphysically. And whatever we say about other people, it is coming back to us. It is coming back to us. So solidarity is really just another way of talking about reciprocity. What I do to another person, I'm doing to myself.
Habit 7 is a little like Habit 6, which is, of course, what you mentioned earlier, stay away from cruel people.
Yes.
Habit 7, choose your comrades.
Yes. Once you've decided to get cruel people out of your life, you have to ask yourself, well, what's left? What remains? First of all, it is better to be nobly alone than to be in low company. And I understand the sting of loneliness. I understand the pain of loneliness. But I can tell everybody listening from experience, it's vastly better, and you will stand much taller and feel better about yourself to be nobly alone than to settle for low company. Only choose to be around friends and colleagues and loved ones who are going to lift you up, who are worthy people. We don't understand the power of choosing our colleagues and our comrades in life. Seize that power. Take that power.
Mitch Horowitz with us. His website is mitchhorowitz.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His book is called The Miracle Habits, which just came out. Where do you get the book, Mitch?
Well, you can get it at Amazon, any online bookseller. It's out in Kindle right now. You can pre-order it in hardcover, and there's an audio edition coming out as well.
Habit 11, opposition is friendship. What does that mean?
It's a tough one. You know, the people who plague us do more to help us than our so-called friends, because our enemies and the people who poke and prod and plague us expose our weak spots, and they make us stronger. If somebody can expose a hole or a gap in your personal armor, don't just curse that person, even if they're being unfair, even if they're needling you in ways that seem cruel or unfair. Ask yourself, what can I learn from this? How can I be stronger? And resolve to be stronger. When somebody lays into you, don't just get angry at them, but ask yourself, are they giving me something to stand on, even if they don't intend to? Opposition is friendship, because opposition, it tones us, it fortifies us, it makes us stronger.
Habit 2, total environment. Tell us about that.
That is one of my absolute favorites. My contention is you should surround yourself not only with people, but with clothing, with objects, with media that build you up, that fortify you. There is absolutely no question that you will not only feel, but you will be physically healthier if you're surrounded by music, by media, by people, by pictures, by furnishings, by circumstance that make you feel at your absolute best. There was a magnificent study done by a Harvard psychologist, Ellen Langer, where she found that if you took elderly folk and put them in an environment that was nostalgic, that evoked feelings of their youth, they actually experienced decreases in blood pressure, increases in flexibility, even improved eyesight. I talk about this in the book. Never underestimate how important your environment is.
I had an email a couple days ago from someone who said, one of the reasons I love listening to your show is because afterwards it makes me feel better.
Yes, yes. Well, one of the things I dig about you, George, and about your show is that you deal with every topic. Nothing is off the table, but you deal with it in a way that doesn't tear people down, but that honors people, that doesn't denigrate people, that lifts people up. And that is extremely important. We live within what I would call an anger economy. Anger is what sells on Twitter, very often on
there's
Facebook.
There's a lot of anger out there today. There sure
Unbelievable
is.
Anger out there today. We can discuss things and we can sort our way through things without denigrating other people and tearing them down. And I have to give credit to you. I don't feel that ever happens on Coast.
Mitch Horowitz with us. We're going to come back in just a moment and take phone calls with Mitch. And if you have a miracle story or you've practiced some of your own techniques, share those with us as well. As I mentioned, his website is his name, MitchHorowitz.com. If you have Instagram, he's got that, which is at MitchHorowitz23. I'll spell his name in a moment. He's also got Twitter, which is at Mitch Horowitz. MitchHorowitz. So get ready to make the phone call. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our free YouTube channel. Coast to Coast AM Official is what you put in the YouTube search bar up there. Or you can go to our website and just click the little YouTube icon in the far right-hand corner of coasttocoastam.com. We will be back in a moment.